Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com. And today we get to spend some time with the number four man on the Twins' all-time saves list. Ron Davis pitched for the Twins between 1982 and 1986. In those four-plus seasons, Davis had 108 saves and struck out 349 batters in 381 innings. So, without further ado, here is Ron. Ron, you were born in Houston, Texas. Can you tell us a little about how it was growing up there and what kind of sports you participated in?
Well, growing up in Houston, we participated, you know, back when I grew up, you know, we played all the sports. Everybody played football, basketball. You had to play football before they let you play basketball. That was probably the biggest thing growing up, is that you had to play football before you were allowed to play any other sport.
Why was that?
Because football's so big in Texas.
Sure.
That if you didn't play the other sport, if you didn't play football, they wouldn't allow you to play the other one.
I guess I can understand that. When I looked out on baseballreference.com, it stated there that you were selected by the Chicago Cubs in the third round of the 1976 free agent draft. But when I try to get a list of that draft, it doesn't show you as being picked there in the third round. It shows somebody else, but I didn't even recognize the name. Were you drafted by the Cubs?
Yes, if you go back and look, there's a lot of noise out here. Let me go inside the office. But in the draft back in my day, there was two drafts. There was one in January and there was one in June. So you have to look up the June draft to find me. I mean the January draft.
Yeah, and I looked in the June draft.
Right, so looking at January draft, so I was drafted in the winter of January.
I see. After you signed with the Cubs, I think you spent the 76 and 77 season with Pompano Beach in Florida Class A ball, primarily used as a starter. Then in 1978, you were moved up to Double A ball, but in June of that year, the Cubs traded you to the New York Yankees in a deal that involved Kenny Holtzman. What was it like to be traded for the first time?
Well, you felt betrayed. You felt, you know, you felt like, you know, it was the worst thing that was happening to you. You just, you didn't understand. Because, you know, you played for the Cubs. You were drafted by the Cubs. So you kind of became a Cub, you know. And,
sure.
And then we played against the Yankees and Fort Lauderdale. They were the Fort Lauderdale Yankees. It's like, whoa, we hate, you know. You dislike the other teams. And all of a sudden, you're traded to a team you have to like.
Yeah.
Jim Saw was my manager in AA in Midland, Texas, and he called me and said, "Hey, you know, you're traded." And he took me to the airport, and he could tell I felt real bad. He says, "You know, son, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to you." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "That means somebody really wants you to trade a major leaguer, Kenny Holtzman, for you. That means they really want you." So I said, "I never thought of it that way." And went over to the Yankees, and they put me in relief, and I was in the big leagues in July.
Yeah. After spending a short time with the Yankees Double A team, you were called up by the big club. Can you share with us how you found out you were being called up to the major leagues?
Yes, they just called me, and the GM, which is Al Rosen, which is was the GM of the Yankees, and the manager, Stomp Merrill, called me in the office and said, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And when he called me in, he says, "This man wants to talk to you." And I got on the phone, and he says, "Hey, I'm Al Rosen, the president of the Yankees, and we're bringing you up to the big leagues tomorrow." And it was like, wow. You just never thought about playing in the big leagues until all of a sudden you get that call. And then I got that call, and it's like, well, thank you. You know, it's just like it was more shock than anything.
Well, that's got to be a really special moment. You made your major league debut at Yankee Stadium against the Minnesota Twins, I think, on July 29th, 1978.
Correct.
You were called up
you were called in the pitch in the seventh inning in relief of Kenny Clay, and the Yankees were comfortably in front by a score of 7-1. You started the inning by walking Butch Weiniger, then Hoskin Powell singled, and then you walked Roy Smalley to load the bases, and then you got a visit from your manager, Bob Lemon, and I think he replaced you with Goose Gossage at the time. Can you share with us what your memories were of that day?
It just happened to be Old Timers that day, and it was like, first of all, just getting called up to the big leagues, I was in a state of shock. and then, you know, you're looking at, you know, Goose Gossage, Sparky Lyle, Thurman Munson, Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter, Dick Tidrell, Bucky Dick, Greg Nils, Chris Chambliss, Mickey Rivers, and Lou Piniella, and you go, oh my God, what am I doing here with these type guys? You know, sitting on the same bench with these guys, so that was a shock. And then I have looked on the other side of me, and there's Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Yogi Berra, you know, Moose Gower, Hank Bowers, and I'm going, oh my God, it was Old Timers Day, so all these guys were sitting in the dugout.
All kinds of Hall of Famers.
Yes. And so I was like, I'm sitting, there was probably, now with all the people that are in the Hall of Fame, I was probably sitting anywhere between 12 to 20, anywhere. I didn't count them, I'd have to go back and count them, but of all the guys for the Yankees that were in the Hall of Fame, so the Old Timers and all the guys that made the Hall of Fame after this, like, I'm probably sitting here with 12 to 15 Hall of Famers.
Yep. Yeah.
So I was definitely in a state of in la la land. And yes, I did walk the first batter, I think it was, but the next one I thought I had a ground ball double play, and it was the weakest ground ball that went through the infield, and I think I walked Roy Smalley on a 3-2 count.
Yeah, it had to be, you know, you can't help but be nervous, you wouldn't think.
I was definitely, I was nervous and excited, but, you know, I thought I was pitching well. I mean, I knew I did pitch well. I was like, hey, man, I'm throwing, you know. And, you know, the umpires, back in here as a rookie, they didn't give as much to the rookies in. They tested you, so they definitely, we're testing. And you can see it today. They still, hey, a young guy comes in here facing a veteran player, they don't give you as much as they should.
Sure. The following year, in 1979, you spent most of the season with the Yankees, and you finished fourth in Rookie of the Year balloting. And you finished the season with a 14-2 win-loss record. You had 9 saves, an ERA of 2.85. Do you consider that your best season?
I wouldn't call it my best season. It was, you know, getting wins as a reliever is just luck. You know, you're coming in, the game's either tied or you're one run down or something of that nature, so you get lucky to get some wins, you know, that way. So 2.85 is today's standard is a great ERA. That was an average ERA back in that day. Today, you know, if you had a 2.85, you would be considered a god around here.
Yep.
The way the ERAs are 5.95, and they're signing, you know, $10 million contracts with 5.95.
Absolutely. You followed up your rookie season with some very good years in 1980 and 81, and you made the All-Star team in 81. What do you remember about your All-Star experience?
Well, my All-Star experience was, I had a blast doing it, of course, but if you got to remember, it's the only All-Star game that was played on August, I believe it was August 10th that year. And, you know, it was kind of weird. We'd been on strike for, I think, 50-some-odd days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I hadn't even thrown a ball in 50 days, and all of a sudden they called and said, hey, the strike is settled. We're going to do an All-Star game in Cleveland, and you're on the All-Star team. So it definitely made it tough to play in the All-Star game that you haven't, you know, you haven't played in 50 games. Everybody hadn't played in 50 games, so it wasn't like I was the only one.
Sure.
You know, everybody hadn't played it, so it was kind of a weird feeling to play an All-Star game in Cleveland, August 10th, and we hadn't played a game in 50 days.
Yeah, that had to be hard. It had to be.
It was like, okay, you weren't in the base, you know, you hadn't been in baseball frame of mind, so to speak, because of, you've been sitting home. I was working in a restaurant in New York City, you know, to make money. And so I was working in the city at a place called Order and the Redskies, trying to make money in the city to survive the strike. A lot of these guys had a ton of money and they could survive it, but, you know, that was just, you know, as you know, minimum salary back when I came up was $17,000, so it's like $360,000 now.
Yeah, huge difference, certainly.
So we had to work. We were working. So, you know, it made it an unusual All-Star game for everybody, just not me, but it was an unusual All-Star game for everybody that was out there.
Your relief pitching in New York kind of raised the public awareness of the importance of the setup role on the pitching staff, and you're often credited as kind of pioneering that role of the table setter, in your case for Goose Gossage. How did you look at your role in those Yankee pitching staffs?
Well, I looked at my role and said I knew my role, number one, so it's like, you know, I knew that, hey, I was going to be, you know, we were winning or tied or one run down from the fourth inning on, you know, from the fourth on inning, I was going to be the pitcher. So the rules have changed a lot as far, you know, relievers back in the day, like Goose Gossage, as great as he was and still is, probably, he could probably still be pitching if he only had to pitch one inning like the guys do today, you know, but all of us had to go 2 to 3 innings on most outings, and when we pitched in relief. If you look at the short man today, they probably have 60 appearances in 58 innings.
Yep.
So if you look at our numbers, we had 120s, 118s, 130s. So we were definitely doubling up on the amount of innings pitched per year. That's for sure.
Yes, you were. No question about that. You made it to postseason play twice. The first time the Yankees lost to Kansas City in the ALCS in 1980, but in 1981, the Yankees made it to the World Series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. After you were leading the series 2-0, you lost 3 games in a row, all by one run. I'm sorry?
We lost 4 games in a row.
Right, yeah. You lost 3 by 1 run, and then you lost the final game 9-2.
Right.
What do you remember about that World Series?
What I remember, you know, is, you know, again, it was a short season year. It was a short season year because that was a strike year. So then they had first half, second half winners. So we had to go play Milwaukee first. So that was really the first, really, I mean, it came about later on in the 90s, I think, that they started adding the other teams. But we had to go play Milwaukee first, and then Oakland had to play somebody. I forgot who Oakland had to play. And then we beat Milwaukee, and then Oakland beat. Then we had to go to Oakland and play. So we had 2 double seasons right there, playoff games right there. Those probably were the first time in baseball history that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then... And then the World Series, you know, winning the first two, you know, was, of course, exciting. I was disappointed in myself. You know, I didn't pitch very well. The season, you know, like I said, hadn't thrown in 50 days, and then all of a sudden you're throwing in an All-Star game, and I hurt my arm a little bit, and I really wasn't effective during the season. I mean, even in the September part, I was off and on quite a bit in September. I just, my arm never really got back into shape, and it was bothering me a little bit. But I wish I had been able to been a little bit, which everybody was the same, so I'm not saying it was just me. It was just I wish for myself I'd have probably stayed a little bit better in shape, and we probably would have won that World Series if I had pitched a little bit better.
Well, you can't blame yourself for losing a World Series, but
I came in a game that I could have definitely pitched better in, and definitely the one in Anaheim. I came in. We were one down, not in Anaheim, but in L.A. We were one down or one run down or tied, and I struck out the first two guys, and then went and sat on the bench, and then I just, you know, like I went out and had an error in right by Reggie, but I mean, that was not the problem. I never could get back into a groove. If you look at the All-Star break in 1981, I was leading the major leagues in strikeouts as a reliever.
Wow.
So I'm probably the only reliever in baseball history that probably led the majors in strikeouts until September.
Yeah, you certainly don't see that happening very often, that's for sure.
I was throwing the ball really well, and then after the strike, I strained some muscles in my arm, and I couldn't throw on the side because it hurt a lot, so I'd only pitch in the games, and so I never got back quite the shape I should have been in, and never could quite get back to the way I was, so I was very disappointed in myself for allowing that to happen. I blame myself for, you know, I thought after about 30 days the strike was over. I mean, the strike was, sure. The season was over, and the season was over, so I didn't stay in shape. And then all of a sudden, you know, we got back together, and I threw one time in 30 days and then had to go pitch in the All-Star game, and it's just like, gosh, my arm was killing me, you know, after that. And it never really got back to the same. And it took me to about mid-season with the Twins in 82 before my arm got back in shape.
Really?
Where it didn't hurt, I should say. Where it wasn't hurting.
Yeah.
I was in shape, but it just where it wasn't hurting as much.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the strike hurt the hitters or the pitchers more, or pretty much equal?
It's 50-50. Hitters, you know, didn't face live pitching, and we didn't face batters, and I think it depended on the individual. You know, you can only throw so many bullpens, you know, and you just like, you know, how much, you know, you're not getting anything sitting out and throwing a bullpen, you know, twice a week, you know. So I think it hurts both equally.
In April of 1982, the Yankees traded you to the Minnesota Twins for Roy Smalley. I think there was a couple other players involved, but for the most part it was for... Tell us your thoughts about that trade.
I was happy as heck to get out of New York, because I went to arbitration that year, and when I went to arbitration that year, I came up to a reporter and said, you know what, there's got to be something for the middle reliever. A stat for the middle reliever, because when I go to arbitration, I got 9 saves, and relievers are paid upon saves.
Sure.
And so when I went into arbitration, I went in there and he says, Ron, I can't pay you like a guy that got 25 to 30 saves in a year. I can only pay you for a guy that only gets 4 or 5 saves a year. So your salary is going to be paid on 4 or 5 saves a year, not on 30 saves a year. So that's when I came up with a stat. It's called the save, and USA Today still carries it today, is they make a save for relievers. I mean, not a save, but a hold, I should say.
Yep.
So I USA Today still has the hold written down.
Yeah, it's a recognized stat now.
It is a recognized stat, but it's not, you know, you don't see it in the paper all the time, and you can use it in arbitration to a little bit, but when I went to arbitration and I lost arbitration after the 8-5 season, the arbitrator told me, right, you can save, and I'll give you the money that you're asking for. So I knew that at that point in time, I would probably never, ever, with the Yankees, with Goose Gossage being as great as he is, and without, he's a Hall of Famer, without a doubt, that I was never going to get paid the amount of money that was due to, you know, to relievers that were doing the holdup. I mean, it was the setup people.
Yeah, that just led right into my next question. It was going to be that with the Yankees, you were the setup man for Goose Gossage, but the Twins wanted you to be their closer. Is that the role that you were striving for? And it's obvious the way you're answering it is.
Yeah, I really wasn't striving. I mean, yes, it ended up being the reason to strive. I was more than happy to be the setup man in New York. But also being the setup man, you also want to get paid of equal value. And the only people in the bullpen that gets paid is the short men.
Sure.
And so they're, I mean, it's changed a lot now, but, you know, so that's the only guy, only person that was getting paid the value of a reliever was the short man that was getting saved. So without getting, without getting the save, you weren't going to get paid. And so I was happy to go to Minnesota, and they said, hey, you want me to, hey, you can go out and, with that opportunity, I can go out and get saves and get paid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, I don't want it to sound like it's all about money, but because it wasn't, it was just about being paid, getting the amount of value that the middle reliever should be getting paid.
I can understand that. You pitched for the Twins between 1982 and 86, primarily as the team's closer. The Twins had some lean years during your stay here, including the 102 loss season in 82, and the team never finished above 500 during your time here. There's some old-time Twins fans that recall you as an ineffective closer with a 19-41 lost record and an ERA of 4.51 and a 1.49 whip, while others point to your 108 saves, which is the fourth best in team history, and say that you did a great job considering the circumstances that you were put into. In the 4 years between 82 and 85, the Twins only won 288 games, and you saved 106 of those. It was like you were the lightning rod for everything bad that ever happened to the Twins during those years. What was it like for you here in Minnesota?
It wasn't that bad for me. It was more worse for my family because they had to sit in the stands and hear. The reporters there, I thought back in those days they were bad. They were just bad writers, bad reporters. You know, they weren't sports people. And so, like you said, I had a 4-something ERA, but if you look at the dome back in those days, it didn't have the tarp, it had the extra bouncy turf. So any ball that hit in the outfield became a double. Anything hit on the ground would get through the hole. So it was tough to have a good ERA there. I mean, they're putting up the tarp. And also, you got to remember, they didn't even have air conditioning the first two or three years there. And so the ball was, the air was blown up to the top, of the roof. And so anytime balls were hit to keep that roof up, without the air conditioner, would just fly right out of there.
Yeah.
So it made it tough to pitch there. I mean, we had a little shortstop which we loved. His name was Houston Jimenez.
Yep, I remember.
I think his name was. And he was like about 5'4", Freddie Patek size. And ground balls, with no exaggeration, on the ground ball to him on the third bounce could possibly bounce, and did happen, bounce over his head. And it's because it got so bouncy. And then our outfielders were great. And don't get me wrong, because we had Tom Berdansky and Pucci came on in a little later. And we had Gary Ward and Mickey Hatcher, which are all quality people. But also, hey, we never played in the dome either. So how many balls are still lost today in the dome? Imagine what it was back in 82, 83 when we didn't even know how to play that. See the ball there. So
yeah.
Fly balls would go up in the air, and, hey, they would lose them.
Yeah.
Those turned out to be doubles and triples.
Yeah, and it was kind of known as the Homer Dome there for a while.
Well, it was. Without the air conditioner put in, and then the big blue tarp. Remember, we didn't have that big blue tarp in right field.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it definitely was a hard ballpark to pitch in. Colorado was when they first started because of the altitude there. Well, then all of a sudden they started doing something different with the baseballs. I think they put the humidifiers on them or something. Humidifiers on the balls. And that stopped that from being such a bad place to pitch.
Now the new Yankee Stadium seems to be a homer dome.
Right. Now that's becoming a place. Now why that's so hard, I don't know. Why that changed, because it's right next door. Maybe there's a different angle of the wind. I don't really know, but why that became such a bad place.
That's been a struggle for him this year. In 84, you had 14 blown saves that tied a major league record. What do you remember about that season? Was there any one single game that really stands out in your mind?
Not really. I should say a Cleveland game. I don't even know what 84, to be honest, I don't even remember, but I remember one time in Cleveland, we were playing in Cleveland, and we had like a 10 or 12 nothing lead, and, they blamed me for losing that ball game. Yeah, I pitched like four innings in that game until the 12th or 13th inning, and I did give up two. I gave up one to tie it in the ninth. And I gave up one in the 12th or 13th inning, but I pitched four innings, gave up two, of course. But, I didn't give up the first 12.
Yeah.
Probably the worst save I remember blowing there. You got to remember, an error is a blown save.
Yeah.
So, I would like for people to go back and say, oh, that was an error. But how many times did I come in with third base? Somebody out, and it's you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just kind of cut out there a little bit.
Somebody had beeped, somebody was called. But, for an example, back in the day when relievers were pitching two or three innings to get a save, well, I would come into games, and I'm not using it by any means an excuse, but you would come into games, hey, it's a 2-1 ball game in the seventh inning with nobody out and a runner on third.
Sure.
A fly ball, that's a blown save. So, a blown save has to be looked at a little differently what a real blown save is. Today, if the reliever comes in there in the bottom of the ninth inning, he's up by one run or two runs, and that's the only inning he pitches.
Absolutely.
So, and nobody's on base.
Yeah, they like to bring their close.
We always started with men on base, and so now that's why you got not just credit to me or any, but you got to go credit to Raleigh Fingers and the Goose Gossages of those guys that did that. How great they were by being able to do that in that way.
Yeah,
and then pitching in the dome, fly balls being dropped is up, and this guy is a blown save. So you look at all that. You can add up to a lot of non-blown saves, I should say. I remember one perfectly. I came in with we were winning like 3-2 or something like that, and I came in with bases loaded. So we're up 3-2. I came in the ninth inning. We're with bases loaded. I still remember this day. Ground ball to short. Over to Johnny Cassino at second. Over to Herbeck, the game's going to be over. Herbeck's glove tore.
Oh, I think I remember that.
His glove tore right through, the ball was a perfect throw by Giants. Nothing that Herbeck did, his glove, his leather happened to just break.
Yeah.
The ball goes through him, it goes right through his glove. Dave Ingles hugging me on the mound, thinking, hey, we won the ball game. And turn around, well, the runner at third, of course, scored. Well, the runner at second, it was going to third. He saw Herbeck drop it. He ran in. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I think I remember that game.
I'm not giving you an excuse because it gives a crud what happened 20-some-odd years ago or 25 years ago. But, if it was really written in the correct way, they would have robbed. Hey, that blown save category, but not Ron Davis's fault. Yep. A runner on third base and you give a routine fly ball to left field, the guy tags up and score with nobody out, blown save. Now, that, I mean, to be honest with you, is that a blown save?
No, really. It's
by that story, it's a blown save, but is it really a blown save?
Yeah. It's a hard category and statistic to really, you know, consider. I mean, like you say, there's a lot of other ways to look at it.
Correct. So that's what I'm saying. If you want to look at blown saves, I definitely 100% messed up on some games. 100%. But you got to give the Homer Domer at that time some credit, the Bouncy Turf some credit on that. Those days, you got to give balls that were lost in the air because of the white, you know, double that our outfielders lost. Balls that outfielders double should have been singles. I mean, you can throw in there. I can throw in there probably 10 or 12 good, legitimate excuses.
No, I understand. You know, through all of that, you still had a lot of fans that were pulling for you and still do. I think at one time someone came out with a I Believe in RD t-shirt that became a real hot item. Do you remember that?
I remember that, and I still have about 10 of those. I sure do.
Is that right? I tried to find a picture of one on the internet so that I could put it in with the story, but I haven't been able to get a picture of one. But it's...
I'd have to look through some of my old boxes and find something. I know I stored some of them somewhere. I don't know exactly where they are, but I know I did store some.
Yeah, they were interesting.
The fans there, you know, I think the fans started realizing it and started following baseball, and they said, you know, hey, it ain't as bad as what the reporters are writing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They started realizing, hey, you know, there was guys there. I mean, Sid Hartman was good. Charlie Waters was good. But if you could go back and find me anybody else that was a decent newspaper man back then, you know, back then no one cared about baseball in Minnesota as far as reporters. So, you know, I still remember this one tall, real tall, lanky guy that was a reporter. You know, he wanted to write about flowers in the newspaper. You know, he wanted to do some deal in a different section of the paper. But hey, well, we have a job for you following the Twins. Why don't you go do this? So that's what we had as reporters back in those days.
Yeah, that makes it tough. But you remember Sid, huh?
Oh, pardon me.
But you remember Sid Hartman.
Oh, I remember Sid and Charlie Waters, and then there was another heavyset man that was in the St. Paul paper. I forget his name.
Yeah, not too sure.
Huh?
Not too sure who that might be. But you know, Sid is still working today.
Oh, I know. I saw when I was up there that last weekend, I saw that, you know, he's still writing some articles and stuff, and I said, yeah, Sid's still here. So I like Sid, and I like Charlie, and, you know, and things of that nature. So it wasn't that. But, you know, the reporters were not very good baseball writers.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote it to sell newspapers. They didn't have a lot of money. What is there to write about? You know, when you're losing 100-some-odd games or, you know, you're always under 500. So, you know, there's always something that, you know, these people had to complain about, these writers. So they just couldn't write boring stuff, so they had to write things that, okay.
Well, there's a lot of negative reporting today. I mean, you see that in the sports sections today. As soon as something happens, you know, due to some kind of loss or a couple of bad outings, and you know, they're all over it, and then everybody jumps on the bandwagon.
Well, I think when I first came into big leagues, the reporters were good reporters and wrote about baseball stuff. Now the baseball column's just an extension of the gossip column.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. There is a lot of that. In August of 86, Ron, you were traded by the Twins to the Cubs. Was that a relief to finally get out of Minnesota, or were you sorry to leave?
I was sorry to leave. They called me in and said, hey, we're going to trade you to the Cubs. And I had a no trade clause in there to the Cubs, so I had to okay it. And I thought about it. I talked it over with my wife and my kids and stuff a little bit, and said, you know, what should we do? And they helped me. They, you know, they said, hey, you know, why don't we try a new fresh start and things like that. But it wasn't the fresh start that was going to help me or anything like that. I just think, you know, the twins wanted to make a move, and I figured, well, since they, you know, when the front office is not backing you, you know, that just says, well, okay, they've kind of lost hope in you, so it would be better to go somewhere else. Not that I would have loved to finish my career there and probably live there the rest of my life in Minnesota. I really enjoyed my stay and had a lot of great fans in Minnesota. Enjoyed my time there. But, you know, when they call you in and say, hey, you got to okay this, it's kind of like, well, you know, maybe they don't really want you.
Yeah, I can understand.
And so, you know, and my thinking is, well, do I really want to be at a place that somebody really doesn't want you?
Yeah.
So that was my only reason that I left, was because I figured they really didn't care for me to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't care that the fans booed or yelled or the reporters wrote that. You know, I forgot. You know, I let that fly. And, you know, in my career, too, as far as getting people out. So I wasn't as good as I should have been anyway at come 86, 87 era.
Mm-hmm. After leaving the Cubs, you went on to pitch for the Dodgers and the Giants. What was it like to play at a smaller market like Minnesota as compared to playing for cities like New York or Chicago or L.A. or San Francisco, for that matter?
I didn't really hear the question, but I think how they like, you know, playing in the picture. I didn't mind, you know, like I say, the Twins was a great, you know, great place to play. Minneapolis was a great place to play. I didn't really care if it's New York, Chicago, L.A. I never really, like I said, I never really got the chance to pitch in those cities that much after I left Minnesota. Not due to them, it's due to, hey, I wasn't as effective anymore. I'd lost a little bit, and I didn't have any arm problems or anything. I just got bad.
It just, you know, age just takes its toll.
Well, I think, you know, I was very young in my aspect of it. I was only 33, 34 years of age in that era. So it wasn't like, you know, I was old. I just think the, you know, pitching, you know, 120-some-odd innings, you know, hundreds of innings over the last 8 or 9 years took the toll more than anything. Just, you know, hadn't been, you know, I think if you were used for an inning, you know, a couple outs in like they're used today, I think, you know, sure, my career would have been extended a year or two or three, maybe, who knows. That's only guessing. But I think, you know, the way they use the relievers now, they last a little longer, that's all.
Sure. The Twins are going to be playing in a new ballpark called Target Field starting next season. You played your entire Twins career at the Metrodome, but you also played at Met Stadium as a Yankee. What do you remember about those stadiums?
The Met Stadium?
Yep.
The old Met, just one of the worst fields in baseball, mosquito-ridden, an Oregon player up in the right field bleachers. Mosquitoes were terrible. I only went there, like we always went there in April and September, it seemed like, when it was freezing cold, and especially the, you know, the August-September ones, it seemed more September ones, I kind of remember Cleveland and Minnesota, that's a long time ago, but going in there playing, you know, that's also where they, you know what I'm saying, so when they played the football games there, you know, isn't there where the Vikings?
Yes.
Well, I just remember all those fields that did baseball and football, the fields just became a disaster. And, you know, with the rain you get in Minnesota and the cold weather, and you know, those fields were just so bad field-wise because football destroyed them.
Yeah. You're starting to cut out quite a bit here.
I'm sorry.
No, not a problem. Ron, what pitches did you throw, and what did you consider your out pitch?
Well, the one they didn't hit that day was the one I considered my out pitch for that day. So, you know, whatever one was, you know, that they didn't hit, I felt comfortable with. So, I mean, I only threw, you know, fastball slider. So, I mean, I would, if some days the fastball was better than others, and I would stick with it, and some days it wasn't as good, so I'd have to go to the slider and try to mix them up and become more of a pitcher instead of a thrower back then.
You kind of answered the question the same way. I asked the same question to Dave Boswell, and his answer was, you know, any pitch that I could get him out with.
That's basically it, because as a reliever, you know, we used to throw 2 and 3 and 4 days in a row. You know, you went out there limping a lot, meaning hey, your arm was not, maybe it wasn't hurt, but it sure was dang sore and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd go out there after, you know, you're pitching in your third day in a row after going 2 or 3. So you go 2 or 3 innings, and you have to pitch the next day. And you went out there what I call limping a lot of days. You'd go out there with about a third of your stuff gone, and you said, well, you know, heck, I would try to invent pitches, just try to get people out some days.
Interesting. I read somewhere that you did not consider yourself a strikeout pitcher, but when you were with the Twins, you averaged 8.2 strikeouts a game, and back in the Yankee days, you once struck out 8 consecutive Angel batters, and in the process set a new Yankee record that might still be in place today.
Not a Yankee record, a Major League record for relievers.
Ah. So,
Major League record by a reliever, 8 strikeouts in a row. That's a Major League record.
Okay, great. But you didn't look at yourself as a strikeout pitcher.
No, I mean, I was just trying to get outs, and occasionally you would get people to strike out people, but you definitely, you know, getting one a game or one an inning, to me, was, you know, I didn't consider that a strikeout guy. It might be in today's category, but I didn't really think it was that much back in the day. You know, when I was watching Goose and Raleigh Fingers and those guys striking out, you know, a couple, it seemed like they always got a couple every game, you know, every inning, I should say. You know, so, you know, when I always felt like they were doubling my strikeouts.
Hmm. Yeah. In today's game, I think they would consider you definitely a strikeout pitcher.
And, you know, like I said, but it's a different game today. It totally is. So, you know, it's a different era, the game today is not even the same game that we played back in those. I mean, it's the same, you know, ball strike out, but it's the thinking process of the game has changed a whole lot.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, doing research on you on the internet, I ran across a quote that was attributed to broadcaster Al Michaels back in 1982 that went like this. It said, "You think Ron Davis isn't trying to get traded? He's done everything but light himself on fire at Minnesota." Do you remember that?
No, I didn't remember, but, I wasn't trying to get traded in 82. It's just like I say, people would, they would look at what the people would write in the paper. I remember Charlie Waters wrote an article, a bad article about me, and then on the back page of the travel section, he wrote, you know, there was a retraction, you know. So whenever there's things said that aren't correct, and they do a retraction, they always put them on the bottom of the back page where no one reads.
Absolutely.
So, in 82, there was a terrible article that got me on the wrong way with the Twins fans. Charlie Waters wrote, "Ron Davis wouldn't pay $2 to watch Twins play." That was the headlines of the sports page in 82.
But how did that come to be?
He was asking me about the tickets in right field that was in the upper tank up there.
Hi.
And you can't see the right fielder from up there. You know, the seats in right field at the very top, you can't even see the right fielder sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even see where if a ball goes up, you don't know if it's a home run or what it is, because you lose it. You can't even see the right fielder.
Everything taken out of context.
Right. So he asked me about those tickets up there, and I said, I wouldn't pay $2 up there to sit in those seats. And I did say, hey, I wouldn't pay $2 to sit in those seats. Because you couldn't see the right fielder. They were talking about the dome, not the twins. They were talking about the dome and the seats and everything. And I wouldn't pay $2 to sit in those seats up there. Mm. Well, then it's a headline. Davis wouldn't pay $2 to see twins play.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's taken out of context, out of meaning, out of, you know. So, I mean, right there, you know, right there, you know, that puts the Twins fans against you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then if you want to look also in 83, in the beginning of the 83 season, what Calvin Griffin wrote about me. He wrote, if I have to pay Davis that amount of money, I beat him in arbitration. If I have to pay Davis that amount of money, I'll die a slow, lingering death.
That would be Calvin, I think.
Well, it was definitely Calvin. No big deal. Calvin said it. But that's the headline of the paper. Well, people read that.
Sure.
Davis must be a butthead. You know, Calvin's saying this, and Calvin's saying that.
Calvin was an interesting character. He, you know, he's back when Dick Woodson was pitching, and he won that first arbitration case. He said, you know, he would never pay him, and you know, before it came time to give him his first paycheck, he was traded to the Yankees.
Right. Well, that's the same way. You know, that was the headline when I beat him in arbitration. If I got to pay him that amount of money, I'll die a full lingering death. And it was only like $375. It was minimum wage today. So, I mean, it was like, so people hated you when people, I mean, Calvin and I were good friends, but when he would say things like that, people hated you for it.
Sure.
And so there was a lot of things that, you know, the reporters would write that made, you know, I'm sure I didn't help by any means by fueling some of it. So basically, after about the 83 season, I just put a recorder in my locker and said, anybody who wants to talk, I pushed the button, now I record it. So they could never, they couldn't, you know, I could say, hey, I got, here's a recording of the conversation. I didn't say that.
Yep.